Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Rosa Brooks, and she's out with a brand new book, Tangled Up in Blue, Policing the American City. The book's available now, and Rosa is a law professor at Georgetown University. And Rosa, lots of academics have written books about policing. You came about this from a very unique perspective. Tell me how you came about getting the information for this book, because I don't think I've heard anybody do this before.
Well, because I'm a little bit crazy, I decided that the best way to learn about policing and what's good about it, what's bad about it, was to join the Washington, D.C. Police Reserve Corps. D.C. has this amazing and amazingly weird program where volunteers can apply and go through the police academy, same training as full-time career officers, and become sworn armed police officers. And when I heard about this, I thought, you're kidding me. They would let a law professor have a badge and a gun. And it just seemed like an amazing opportunity to really be inside a world that's often very, very closed to the outside.
We hear a lot about implicit bias in academia and in just normal work. So I'm sure you came at this with, you know, different things that you had learned over the years of doing research, reading about it, writing about it, studying it. But when you went into this, going to the police academy to become a reserve police officer, did you have to put all that aside?
I did. I mean, frankly, there's not a lot of room to be thinking about yourself. It's such a exhausting and exhaustive training process, and being on patrol is exhausting and exhaustive. And I think for me, I come from a family of left-wing activists, and I grew up hearing that, you know, police are the enemy, police are brutal racist thugs. But I've always been really suspicious of the simplistic, you know, kind of binary oppositions our culture favors. You know, police are brutal racist thugs, or they're self-sacrificing heroes, and I always thought it's got to be more complicated than that, and that's very much what I found. It is more complicated than that.
You go to the academy, and so is this the same training that a police officer who's a member of the union paid for his or her job? Is it the same training you get?
Yes, it's exactly the same training, and in fact, for portions of it, reserve recruits are in the very same classrooms and classes as the career recruits, for instance, for firearms training and emergency vehicle skills and some of the other training programs. You're not really differentiated. Everybody just looks at you and you're wearing the recruit uniform and you're a recruit.
I thought this was so strange because we have in our community here, we live in a small area, and they have a sheriff's posse, which are volunteer people that do things like parking patrol or traffic control at concerts or things like that. So what, and it always struck me as to why would somebody volunteer to be a police officer? It sounds like just an awful job. So I know how you came about it because you were looking at it from an academic perspective and wanted to learn more. What did you find for other people who were in this program?
You know, a lot of people saw it as a form of community service. A fair number of my Reserve Corps colleagues and my classmates in the academy were former military. Many of them saw it as a way to be involved in the community, get to know the community, give back, et cetera. So I think people overthink it. I think in the circles I am in, academia tend to be very hostile to policing, but I think For many ordinary people, including in the African American community, it is much more complicated, and people do tend to perceive police as, you know, recognizing there are real huge problems, but that police also do help people. And I think a lot of the volunteers for the Reserve Corps come into it thinking, I want to help people. And for that matter, a lot of the career officers I've spoken to, you say, why did you decide to do this? And many, many, many of them, I would say the majority, talk about having either been a crime victim or had someone close to them be a crime victim and wanting to help other people in that situation.
So you get out of the academy, and we're talking about the last half of the last decade, and you start working with D.C. Metro, and you explain to us in the book something called the secret city. Can you kind of explain that ecosystem?
Yeah, one of the things that was just fascinating to me was getting to kind of look behind the curtain at what keeps a city going, what's going on when most people are sleeping, who's still awake, and you know, janitors in buildings are awake, emergency room doctors and nurses are awake, cops are awake, you know, security officers are awake. And it was just, I'm sort of nosy, so I found it so strange and fascinating to, you know, you'd be out patrolling at 2 in the morning when most people are asleep, and you'd be seeing the things like how the D.C. metro system, the metro rail system, is being repaired in the small hours of the night. We got to go sort of in the parts of the tracks that people don't ordinarily get to go to. You know, what does the Smithsonian Museum look like at 2 in the morning? Well, if you're a police officer, you can walk in. It's, you know, no one will mind if you want to use the bathrooms or wander around for a few minutes. You know, there are traffic accidents in the middle of the night, and you're standing there on the highway shutting down the road and, you know, watching the incredibly intricate dance of these tow trucks pulling cars out of ditches. It's an incredible set of skills, and I think most of us, we don't see a lot of that because it's happening while we're asleep, but it's there.
There's a certain segment of society, I think, that likes to teach that all police officers are heroes, and certainly some of them are. There's a lot of people that teach that all police officers are thugs. Certainly some of them are. You've said that it's more complicated than that, but what have you found as far as the way that society gives the benefit of the doubt overall in situations involving police and either minorities or criminals in general?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think no question about it. Two pieces of that. One is that the law, the way the Supreme Court in particular has interpreted the U.S. Constitution, tends to give the benefit of the doubt to police officers if there is, for instance, an incident involving lethal force, someone is killed. The Supreme Court has essentially said if a reasonable officer would have perceived a threat and thought it was necessary to use force, we're not going to second guess that, even if it turns out that they were wrong about that threat. And you add that to the doctrine of qualified immunity, it makes it extraordinarily difficult to hold officers accountable, even when their absolutely negligent actions created a situation in which someone else got killed. And so that's one piece of it. The other piece, and this is something that really struck me at the police academy, so much of our training sort of drove home this notion that everybody you encounter is trying to kill you. You know, you have to watch people's hands. You can't let them be in a kitchen where there are knives. You can't let them sit on the sofa where they could have a weapon concealed under the sofa cushions. And we were constantly watching these videos of, you know, police officers being killed in various terrible situations. And the problem with that is that policing is dangerous. It's a dangerous job, but it's not nearly as dangerous as most police officers think, as they come to think when they're exposed to this sort of constant videos and so on of cops getting killed. You know, I think it does make a lot of police officers go into situations primed to believe that they're about to face, you know, a mortal threat. And if you are absolutely convinced that everybody you encounter is, you know, 2 seconds away from reaching into their pocket, pulling out a gun and shooting you, you're going to be a little bit trigger happy yourself. And I think that is part of the culture we have created.
Well, and I think every time a police officer is killed, we hear about it now. It makes national news, or a lot of times. But you point out in the book, there's a lot more professions out there that are way more dangerous than policing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No, when it comes to overall on-the-job fatalities, being a police officer doesn't even make the top 10 most dangerous professions. Even if you focus solely on which professions are you more likely, which occupations are you more likely to be murdered on the job, police officers still don't come out on top. And the military is excluded from this, by the way. This is just domestic U.S. occupations. The job in which you're most likely to end up being, you know, shot, stabbed, or killed by somebody, as opposed to dying in an accident, it's being a taxi driver, limousine driver, Uber driver, that kind of job. Almost twice as likely as cops to die in a homicide on the job. But of course, nobody says we need to arm Uber drivers. You know, we need to make sure that every taxi driver is trained to, you know, shoot first if they see a passenger unexpectedly reach into their pocket or something. You know, the way we talk about police, I think, both makes the dangers to them seem greater than they are. They're real, but they're not as great, and encourages a kind of risky behavior by police officers that often has lethal costs for ordinary people, especially poor people and people of color.
There's also a term out there that's over-policing. That's a term that's used both on street level and in the academic level. What is it, and how does that affect what goes on the street?
So the idea of over-policing is that in poor neighborhoods, particularly poor neighborhoods of color, that the police presence is large, visible, and overly heavy-handed, and people in some communities talk about the sense of the police as an occupying force. And I certainly saw that in Washington, D.C.'s 7th Police District, where I was assigned, one of the poorest parts of the city. There were police cars every few blocks. You know, you couldn't drive for more than a few blocks without passing a D.C. Metropolitan Police Department vehicle. And you don't see that in the more affluent parts of the city. You know, you can go for a week without ever seeing a police car if you don't happen to be in the right place at the right moment. That, I think, is part of what people mean, you know, that if you have more cops in a neighborhood, you're going to have more contacts between police and citizens, residents of that neighborhood. And if you have more contacts, odds are you're going to have more unpleasant, tense, scary conflicts and potentially more violence and more arrests. So it becomes kind of a self-fulfilling cycle. The only thing I would say, though, that I think people often don't quite appreciate when they talk about over-policing is that it's in part demand-driven. You know, police go where the 911 calls are coming from, and there's often also great demand for policing within poor communities, which do tend to have more crime. You know, so it does get very complicated. You get people calling the police for problems that really the police can't solve, but they call the police because there are no alternative sources of assistance. So, you know, which in turn means that people say, "Oh well, look, the police get all these calls. We better increase their budgets," which in turn means there's less money for the other social services people could turn to. So it's a messy, convoluted problem, but it's not just caused by cops or city officials saying, "Let's put lots of cops in this neighborhood just for the heck of it, just to be an occupying force." It is in part caused by communities are not homogeneous, and even in a community where you'll find lots of people who say, "I hate the police, they're like an occupying force," you'll find a lot of other people who will say, "I want to have a police car on my block. We need more police around here because I'm worried about crime."
There is another stereotype out there that police officers are kids who were bullied, who've now grown up, and they want to become the bullies. Did you experience any of that as you got to know police officers in D.C.?
I certainly saw some people who fit that description, but I think that certainly not everybody. I mean, overall, I would say that the officers I met really did see themselves as being in a helping profession. You know, many of them either had been crime victims or had someone close to them, a sister, a brother, a mother, a close friend, who had been a victim of a very serious crime, and some of them had been on the verge of becoming criminals in their youth. And you know, it's a cliche, but you would hear over and over the people saying things like, you know, "When I was 15, I was going in the wrong direction, but I met a cop who cut me a break, and if it hadn't been for that person, you know, I would be in jail today, and I want to be that kind of mentor to someone else." So I do think, actually, more than people realize, a lot of people go into policing for very idealistic reasons. That said, for some significant percentage of those idealists, that idealism gets beaten right out of them at the academy and on patrol.
All right. It's a fascinating insight into a world that a lot of us don't know about. The book is called Tangled Up in Blue, Policing the American Society by Rosa Brooks. It's available now. Go check it out, Rosa. Just a fantastically interesting book, and thanks for joining me to talk about it.
Thank you, Brian.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
Time we stop. Hey, what's that sound?